makers of Supercell gasoline invite you to Shell Chateau, where your host is the world's outstanding entertainer, Al Jolson, with an all-star panel of famous guest stars. We push you now to Shell Chateau, where you'll be greeted by Al Jolson.
Good evening, friends. Your name somehow like every call right now, but know you all I vow. Good evening, friends. Here at last, one time, madame, monsieur, Berry, one star, Jerry, from a town, little wave, wave, wave. I know you all I do. Good evening, friends. Welcome to Shell Chateau, where each Saturday night we bring you an hour of supermobile, the greatest stars in the entertainment world. Just listen, and I'll tell you who is here tonight. For music, we have Victor Young and his officer. And tonight, Victor is so proud of his officer. And why shouldn't he be? All the boys are dressed up in the latest tuxedo suit. They're Cinderella suits. They must be back by 12. For song, we have Miss Estelle Taylor, one of the most charming stars of the stage and screen. You, of course, know that Miss Taylor's great opposite, most of us great leading men. So I asked her, I said, Miss Taylor, who do you think in your estimation is the greatest lover on the screen? And she said, well, Al, frankly, it's hard to say. But when it comes to making love, all men are like automobiles. They all use the same clutch. From the sports world, we have Alan Dupre, the professional golf champion of 1934 and winner of many golf trophies. And speaking of golf, last Sunday I played with 50 Young. What a golfer he is. He took a terrific swing at the ball, and listen, he ripped his trousers. He turned around to me and he said, listen, Al, is it a big rip? I said, if it was any bigger, you'd be open champion. Well, and from the dramatic scene, we have the glamorous star of the screen, the stage visit. And it's remarkable how much David keeps in front of me. He tells me from dieting. Say, I know a woman who wanted to lose weight, so she went on a vegetable diet. The first week, she ate nothing but lettuce and tomatoes, and she lost 5 pounds. The second week, she ate nothing but carrots and peas, and she lost 10 pounds. The third week, she ate nothing but onions and garlic, and she lost her husband. Now comes the beast of his stuff. For comedy, we have George Ethel, the very great comedian, and I might add that George is one of the finest after-dinner speakers in America today. As George himself would tell you, he has made so many speeches that all you have to do is show him half a grapefruit, and he just doesn't talk. Well, when he came to Shell Chateau this afternoon, I wanted to have a little talk with Georgie. For old time's sake, I have known him for years. So we went to a restaurant here in the neighborhood, and we had a sandwich and a cup of coffee. And was I embarrassed? I felt in my pocket, and I realized I had no money with me. Of course, I didn't want Georgie to pay for it. I wasn't trying out fumbling. I really didn't have any money. So I explained to the cashier. He said, if you have no money with you, don't worry. It's all right. I'll just write your name on the wall. And I said, listen, I wouldn't want people to see my name on the wall. He said, don't worry, they won't. Your coat will be hanging on it. And now, ladies and gentlemen, a little song that is fast becoming the hit of the season. A song from that grand picture, Broadway Gondolier, sung so marvelously by Kit Powell, The Rose in Her Hair. Hit it, Victor.
Here's a rose, and it grows like a rose. I found a rose nestled in someone's hair. Sweet was the rose.
of moonlight and a rose in her hair. In my arms there was no one, so I just put her there. Her lips was a promise, in my heart was a prayer. When I finally went, I went home with a scent of a rose in her hair. Love was in blue, in the gloom of the night. Bright was the moon on the night we were there. Love was in bloom, and so was a rose in her hair. In her eyes there was moonlight, and a rose in her hair. In my arms there was no one, so I kept her there. On her lips was a promise, in my heart was a prayer. When I finally went, I went home with a scent of the rose in her hair. And what a champion. His name, Alan Dutra. He was one of the biggest men that ever reached the top in the ancient game of golf. He won the United States Open Championship last year. And just a couple of weeks ago, he made a world record in golf, which will stand for years. Honestly, you really ought to see the way that man can smack that little steroid of sucker pressure. To you folks who've never met a harlot, Princeton, or Rene Bliss, such a pleasure, hero, is nothing more than a golf ball. And here is a golf ball expert himself, Alan Dutra. Hey, Alan, it's very good having you here.
I'm glad to be here, Al. Make the many changes when you call on the golf course. Please, huh, Dave?
Please, my Dave, hold it. I gave no clue. You were complaining about golf and you couldn't help it, man. But tell me this. I read in the papers about that world record you made out in Santa Monica a few weeks ago. What paper is paper? Say, who believes things in the paper? I want to hear it from your own lips. What tournament was it?
It was the Santa Monica Midsummer Open Championship. And the weekend let a darn good player in it. For some reason, I just happened to get out the first day, and it seemed like I just couldn't do anything wrong. So the first round, I took a 64.
64 for each junior hole? Say, what is par for the quarter?
71.
7 under par for the first 18. I'll bet you couldn't keep up that pace.
No, the next round I took a 66. And the round after that, I got another 66.
5 under par for the second and third round?
Right.
Go on.
The last round, I got a 70.
Shot at 70. Well, that's what I call going to pieces. Came in 1 under par. Hard. You talk about your 64 and your 66s. I was pretty hot playing out Landry myself. I was playing out the Hillcrest, and I shot, believe it or not, a 63.
63?
Yeah, but on the second nine was I rough. Listen, Olin, when a man shoots 266 with 72 holes, that's golf. What was the old record?
Up to then, 267 was the lowest score that had ever been made in 72 holes of competitive golf. And the course more than 6,000 yards long.
I give up. You would come over and play with me sometimes, Olin.
I'd love to, Al. I give lessons, you know. Wait a minute.
On this program, all we do is sell gas.
I see.
I know you're a great pro, Olin, but tell me, did you ever play as an amateur?
I always played once as an amateur, Al. In Memorial Day Farm in Del Monte, 1924.
In Del Monte, 1924.
That's right. Did you win? Yeah, I won. And right after that, I turned professional.
Hey, I want to know something. You know, everybody's going to learn. Where did you learn how to play golf?
When I was 10 years old, I started caddying at Del Monte Camp. And I kept it up until I was 14.
I see. Then you really learned to play on a Del Monte course while you were a caddy, huh?
No, I didn't know. You see, nowadays we let our caddies play around the course in the morning. But in those days, the caddies were strictly forbidden to play on the club course. Of course, there weren't any driving ranges or anything like that in those days either. So where I learned to play golf was in the hayfield.
A hayfield, that's right.
Where was it? I'd like to learn how to play there myself. Well, listen, from starting to play the hayfield, you surely have become a great golfer. But tell me something. Since you became pro and played in all these tournaments, what would you say was the biggest thrill you ever had?
Well, Al, I guess the biggest thrill was when I won the National Open in Philadelphia in 1934.
Come on, big boy, tell us about it.
You know, the funny thing about that tournament was I was so sick when I got to Philadelphia, I didn't think I'd be able to play.
What was the matter?
I get sick of the training on the East, and I actually lost 18 pounds between Los Angeles and Philadelphia.
18 pounds?
That's pretty weird. I would see how you could even play.
Well, believe me, I had to take it very easy. And when I went out for that last round, I was all in.
Lawson said that we just won the British Amateur, was playing with me. And he literally had to carry me the last few holes. When I stepped up to the tee on the 18th, I needed a 5-2 amp,
yeah?
Well, the last hole in the course is a long 4-par hole, about 445 yards long. But it's not often that you get into trouble. You have to drive right over a stone quarry off the tee. If your ball doesn't carry, rather than 200 yards, you're ruined, and I mean you're ruined. Well, I cleared the quarry, and then Lawson Bell absolutely dragged me up the slope to where my ball was lying. Gee, how a cold sweat goes over when I think of it. At the end of the fairway, I could see cameras, sound trucks, thousands and thousands of people. Well, I walked up to my ball, and I thought of my wife and kids back home with me, because eventually they'd
And I knew I had to revenge.
So I lit a cigarette, walked around the ball a couple of times until I felt a little better. Then I took out that good old spoon I've had for 10 years and hit the ball. Well, there she sailed right down the middle of the course and landed on the green.
So, stop, boy. Come on, take that pot. Take that pot.
I didn't think that for now. You see, I was 40 feet from the pin, and I could afford to be careful. But it was within 6 feet of the cup. Then I took another great cup of foot, which stopped just an inch from the lip. And then I snapped it in.
What a round. And it went, say, what's the next tournament you're going to enter?
I'm going to see it. Well, the match I'm training for now isn't exactly a tournament. You see, I'm going east in December as a member of the American Ryder Cup team to play against England at Ridgewood, New Jersey.
Mm-hmm. Do you think we'll win the Ryder Cup matches this year?
It's hard to say, Al. But all of us are going in there to try. There have only been 4 Ryder Cup matches since the cup was donated by Mr. Ray. And the English have won 2 of them, and we've won 2 of them. We lost in 1933 by half a point, and I hope this year we can nose them out.
I hope so, too, and I know all the folks here in Shelter Gold. And in fact, all of the United States will join me in wishing you all kinds of luck next month in Ridgewood, New Jersey.
Thank you.
Now, how to make your money go farther?
Out of every dollar you spend for gasoline, 80 cents goes for driving around your own neighborhood. Here's why. 4 out of every 5 miles you drive are on short trips to the store, English, bank, church, pub, and to see friends. It's stop-and-go driving, the kind of driving that wastes money, unless you're using gasoline made with your requirements in mind. You can now get such gasoline if you ask for Super Chef, the first truly balanced gasoline. It gives you the 3 kinds of power you need in perfect balance. Power for quick starting, power for accelerating and hard pulling, and power for steady driving. By using Super Shell, you cut down the usual waste on everyday driving. You can save as much as a cupful of gasoline every time you start and warm up the engine. You save up to another cupful on 10 minutes of rapid accelerating. And since you often start your car 10 times a day and accelerate to shift gears as many as 60 times a day, these cupfuls you save soon mount up into gallons. You know about how often you have to buy gasoline. Well, next time get Super Shell. Then just notice how much farther that tank full of Super Shell goes. How much longer it is before you need to buy gas again.
I'm going to bring you our 2 kids, Jack, Ben, and Peggy Gardner. And boy, what a time they had last Sunday. They went over to Catalina Island to go fishing. Well, sir, they were trolling for a little motorboat, and all of a sudden, Jack got an enormous swordfish on his line. He bore him for about an hour. So he finally got alongside, he hollered to Peggy, give it the gas.
Well, Peggy doesn't know much about fishing, and she thought he said, give it the gas.
So she pulled her throttle, the boat shot away, and, well, Jack lost his swordfish. Of course, I know a lot of fellas who tell their wives how to board a big net. But say, listen, I won't be giving you people any ideas. But Jack forgave her. Of course, that's sweet.
Why? Well, they're in love.
Now we're going to sing Through the Doorway of Dreams from the Greek broadcast of 1935.
Yes, and
Lady Darling.
Stuff, you know what I mean? I started to be like that girl in the picture you possibly saw in the motion picture Private World.
Where the girl is a little bit, you know, she comes in and she says,
I'm Terry Flint, I've come to see you. I'm Terry Flint, I've come to see you. That's my wife on the six shows. I'm Georgia Kessler, I'm on again. Yes, plenty of time, though, and I was kept over for, well, they extended the engagement for the second week. They announced it that way. I had to come in for 2 weeks originally, but the second week we had a grant and we had 300 children, a kiddie show. 300 children and 1,200 mothers. I never saw so many relations in my life, you know. And kids are all over. You come to the dressing room, open up a can of cold cream, three children jumped out, you know. But it was interesting talking to the children, children of all different nationalities, you know, and all kinds. I got to talking to a couple of the Jewish children for their novelty of the thing. Well, it is a novelty because the children out here, I find, have our names differently. They're mostly the same type of children that we have in the East, you know. Where I live in New York, I mean, most of the kids are named after their physical forefathers. Here it's a little bit different. I said to one child, what's your name? And he said, Sinclair is my name. Sinclair Rosenberg is my name. And this is my boy, Flancy, which Clinton Sink. So I got friendly with all the youngsters, and one afternoon following one of the performances, I was in the dressing room, two little mothers in there, and the mothers, one of these children was calling him, say, Cornelius. But Cornelius evidently didn't hear his mother. Another kid, I said, not you, hey, shoot, you know what? But really, the theaters out here, I mean, are different, as I say, from the ones we have in New York. I played an engagement at the theater on Broadway some months ago, a motion picture theater. They begin at 9 o'clock in the morning. Well, what kind of customers are you going to get at 9 o'clock in the morning? Well, see, so you come out, you look through the wings, and the entire audience consists of traveling salesmen. You know what I mean? They've been up about an hour. They couldn't sell anything. They come in the theater, put their samples under the seat, and they face it and they act at all that and over. Because I stand for real work. You know what I mean? Then about 12 o'clock, the ladies come. Of course, the ladies, they don't come either to see the picture or the play. Their main object to Mike is to save a seat for a friend. That's all they have. And this procedure is followed in this manner. The lady generally comes with her husband's hat. That's the idea, huh? Puts the hat on the seat to her right or left. And you come in, you want to know, well, I'm with my husband. He gets it, you'll be back in a minute, huh? But it's interesting, and it's good for an actor to play that type of theater, particularly in these fasting days of the drama. Because you play four or five or maybe six times a day, and it keeps you mentally alert. You've got to think a new joke at every performance. But you're working with the same people all day. I have an aunt who is one of that type of theater players. She goes in, and once she's in, she stays the whole season. You know what I mean? And it's a remarkable thing about her, as it happens. I mean, I say this with no ulterior motive, because I got the job, but I mean, she is the most ardent joke and thing. Remembers all its plays and its pictures and listens to its programs, but loves the songs, but has no idea about attributing a melody to a break. You know, there are some people that, for instance, I dined at Suzanne's house, and she was characteristically humming a song for herself, no? Cocktails for two. And so, ladies and gentlemen, this time, a popular song called It's Easy to Remember, but So Hard to Begin. Victor, a more note of instruction. I mean, to make out I'm not singing, just make out it's Bill Al and play it, you know, his way. Go ahead, everybody. With you, I own the earth. With you, I rule creation. You. And what's it worth? Life is just an imitation. That sweet expression I see before me, the way you look when we met, it's easy to remember. I hear you whisper, I always love you,
that lonely feeling, feeling cool eyes, that one clear moment is there before me, and though it's raining everywhere, it's easy to remember what's so hard to forget.
I love this song.
I tell you why. Got a nice, sentimental, old-fashioned sway to it. Kind of song that I used to sing when I was a little fellow with Gus Edson. Of course, ladies and gentlemen, in those days, the song had ever so much more sentiment and deep feeling than the ones that I sang. I don't know if she sang a love song. My God, she knew it was a love song by Michael. I can't tell why I love you, but I do. I'll be with you when the roses bloom again. You love me in December as you do in May. Love song. Today, the love songs are, I want to go back to Chacamaca with a wire, two cigarettes in the dark, and I'm out in the cold again. Looky, here comes Cookie. Songs have so much heart, so much feeling. Well, of course, nearly everything seems to have changed since I was a little fella. Even the kids are different. Children haven't got that same sweet, childish simplicity they used to have. It's either born, it leaves its cradle, and it's a grown-up before you know it. It forgets the springtime of its youth almost immediately. I remember around Christmas time, you say to some little fellow, well, sonny boy, soon the Christmas will be here, and then what do you want Santa Claus to put in your stocking on Christmas morning? And the child would wistfully answer, well, sir, toy drum, soldier coat, a baseball glove, some sweet, childish fancy. I got a nephew, 6 years old. I said to him this Christmas, well, sonny, what do you want Santa Claus to put in your stocking? He says, Joan Blondell.
It's not a woman who is a cook or merely a good cleaner or can only furnish a house nicely.
No.
A good housekeeper is a woman who can do all these things well. Now, it's the same way with gasoline. It's not enough for a gasoline to merely start quickly or pull up hills or just be good for long, steady driving. If your gasoline does not give you all three of these different kinds of power, it's wasting your money. You see, 80% of your driving is stop and go. Short trips around town, stopping for red lights or inching along in heavy traffic. Well, there is now a gasoline specially adapted to this stop-and-go driving we all do. It's Super Shell. It's the first truly balanced gasoline. It gives you the three kinds of power you need in just the right proportion.
This is Shell Out Jolton, folks. We're back in Shell for Gold. The show is going on. Back we have George Jessel, S. Shell Taylor, Holland Dutra, Betty Davis. And last but not least, Dixie Young and his duty. Tonight, Dixie is going to play a medley of tunes. But before we hear him, I want you folks to know that Dixie isn't feeling so well this evening. Last night, Dixie got a terrible shock from an electric light bulb. He turned it on and found his sweetheart kissed another fellow. Anyway, tonight he played a medley of tunes in honor of Bing Crosby's birthday, which fell on the 3rd of May. As usual, Victor is late. But the medley is really swell and has all the great tunes from Bing Crosby's pictures. Shout out, you creepy ass.
Thank you.
here.
My name is F. Bell Taylor. You've just been signed to play opposite James Cagney, the Frisco Kid. And tonight you're going to sing for us right here in Show Chateau. Kiss F. Bell Taylor.
Thank you, Mr. Dolphy. Thank you, ladies and gentlemen.
Would you like me to tell the folks about the song you're going to do?
Oh, I'd like to tell them now. I'm going to sing a song called Solitude. And I hope the people here in Shell Chateau would like me singing that song half as much as I have enjoyed Mr. Dolphy.
I'll let you tell it to all the boys.
All right, then, you're playing.
Yeah.
thing.
Okay?
I love your song.
Second, I want to compliment you on the outfit you're wearing.
It's really beautiful.
Thank you so much, Mr.
You know, Taylor, I've known you a long time. It's the most remarkable thing how you always manage to wear the right thing at the right time. You're always in style.
I want to thank you again. You know, I always started on sweet occasions. But you'd be surprised how difficult it becomes. You know, the child's style changing so much.
Well, or yesterday I read, well, 100 years from now, women won't be wearing anything at all. And believe me, it worries me.
Why should it worry you? You won't live to see it.
That's what worries me. Present one of Hollywood's most brilliant young actresses. She's made many fine pictures, and last year, both the critics and the public hailed her magnificent performance of Human Bondage and the Masterpiece. Our latest picture is Front Page Woman. And we'd like to present her to see from this new picture, but the fact is, the picture is such a marvelous surprise stage, we couldn't do the best thing for it without giving the picture away. So tonight, Miss Davis want to show her versatility by presenting a scene from a very famous play by A. Thomas called Just Suppose. With Robert Kent and Lord Carnaby and John William Kitt, the prince. And now I want to introduce Miss Betty Davis. Just Suppose is the story of a girl and a prince. The girl is in America, the daughter of an old Virginia family. The prince might be the Prince of Wales, but of course he really isn't. The prince lives in America has met Miss Linda Lee Stafford to fall in love with her. But Linda Lee knows that they can never marry, so she runs away. And the prince sails away on a battleship. A month later, Linda's alone in the garden of her home when she hears someone at the gate. She looks up and is astonished to see Lord Carnaby, the prince's unofficial guardian.
Lord Carnaby? Is this a ghost?
No, my dear child, it's the man Pantadol.
I thought I'd been.
Yes, I know. You bought me hundreds of miles of sea. And now, your American newspapers are so very unreliable.
You bring me some message from ship?
Yes, my dear, I do.
Well?
I fear I must appear to you as a highly inconsistent old man. However, it was Gladstone, I believe, who described consistently. It's a bugbear of city mind. Oh, what is that?
Would you think it's crudely American of me if I asked you to come to a point?
Miss Abbott, when I last saw you, I begged you not to see the beautiful.
How could I help but remember?
Now I have the honor to ask you to forget that I ever made that.
Lord Carnaby.
I beg you to think of me.
Oh, you can't mean it.
Yes, my dear. I do mean just that.
Well, I don't understand.
Well, this then is what happens. Expecting to see you again, he goes away quite happy. And then, silence on your part, disappearance. A conviction on his part of some reveals to his understanding. He implored me to keep the ship within touch for a day or two, and so we altered our course. Southward. Then came a message from Shipley. He was in town and was on your way home. So, dear lady.
But why?
Because the Virginia girl was coming home again. Because he couldn't bear to leave her forever in the shadows of such a family. And because his grief at such a prospect was so poignant, so vivid, that it touched even the withered heart of the aged professional liar who now speaks to you. Then.
I don't think that I can bear it.
Can you bear it to send him away?
I know.
Oh, my dear, I know. I've only a gray old war horse, crippled and scarred and torn. I know the pangs that youth can feel, but there's nothing over. And now, my dear, I say, will you?
Where is he?
Waiting. There.
Send him to me.
Thank you. Thank you.
But if I may ask. No, Lord Carnaby. There ought to be no but this time. I closed the book once. You've opened it again. In it I must read what's written.
Well, about what you said, but there is something I now feel it necessary to confide to you. Something even his highness doesn't know. Because we feel it should be kept from
him. Yes, Lord Connor.
The prince's father. Gravely, yes.
Oh, my poor, poor kid.
No. But we must be prepared, friend.
I understand. And thank you for your confidence. Lord Connor, I may never see you again. But if so, I should like you to remember that I did what I could, and that it wasn't very easy.
My dear child, I've lived a long, eventful life. Countless of the men and women I've known, and I dare say, as I grow older and feel, I shall forget most of them. But not you, Martin. Not you. Just wait for a moment. Linda.
Yes, darling.
I couldn't go. I couldn't.
Oh, I'm afraid you shouldn't be here.
Why didn't you write? Why didn't you send me a message? I don't see how you could do it.
Don't.
No, I don't.
You're not very clever, are you? Can't you see that I couldn't bear to say goodbye to you? And now it seems that I've got to do it after all.
Yes. But I've done a lot of thinking since I saw you last. And I've made up my mind I was wrong.
Wrong?
Yes, wrong. It's just this. I can't come out of your life. I simply cannot bring myself to do it. Without saying, oh, you know it well enough. But for once in my life, too loud as it is, I'm going to say to the girl I love, just like any other man, my darling, I love you.
Please.
Mustn't have said. Just let me tell you. At midnight, I fail. And all Europe is going to be empty. Because you're not there. You're simply angry.
Do I look angry? Hush. Kiss me.
Yeah, darling.
I'm the girl who cried for the moon and got it.
Never to see you. Never to hear your voice or take you in my arms again. All my life. How can I do it? How can I?
You can do what you must.
Has it ever occurred to you that I can quit the whole thing?
Quit?
Yes, chuck it. Chuck the whole business, bag and bag.
Oh, darling, you can't.
I shouldn't be the first, and I dare say not the last. Before heaven, I will if you'll stand by me.
I don't say such things to you.
Why not? After all, what's it worth? Not one hair of your blessed head.
Sweetheart, you're dreaming.
My dearest, I want you. Just you. Spend my whole life long with you. Oh, my dearest, let me do it.
Poor Dick.
You game?
Game?
Yes, game. Game for the loveliest adventure in history. A tale the world will tell 100 years from now.
Listen to me.
Marry me tonight.
Oh, but Dick,
I need it. It's not very late. Surely we can find some father to say those little words. You, George Chester, take Linda Lee Stafford to be your lawful wedded wife. I do. You, Linda, take. I do. And there you are. What can I do about it?
If this is all wild talk.
If you love me as I love you, you wouldn't think twice. You'd say as I do. A girl take the world if I may have my love.
Wait, it's just because I do love you as I like to think few men have ever been loved before. You're all right in one respect. You'd be so easy and so wonderful. So easy. And then... Well, just as all had been won, we should find that all was lost.
Well, lost.
Oh, not the things that we should lose. Mm. Darling, it's so hard. When my heart cries, yes, yes, whatever it be. When my head cries, no, no, no. And I know my head is right. Oh, I'm not very old, and I'm not very wise, but I know one thing, and it's this. Love is big, but... Life is bigger still.
My love and my life are one.
Dear kid, if I weren't so sure in my heart that you're going to be a strong man, doing the work that only you can do, carrying the burden that no one else can bear, reflecting honor upon your country and your blood, if I weren't so sure of this, I might say yes.
Do, my dearest, do.
I can't. For I see all too clearly what would happen then. For you to do this thing would be the act of a man who has turned his back upon his honor, betrayed his country, and sold his people. Poor woman. That's what the world would think.
Rough the world.
Ah, yes, but I should think so too.
Linda.
And shouldn't I be right? Ah, yes, in your heart, you know it. And then, well, how could I go on loving you as I do? A man who would save his country and his faith. Yes, and in failing that would save me too. And oh, Kit, darling, It'd kill me if I could not love you.
When it comes to this, I must choose between you and your love.
That's what it comes to.
It's a bitter choice.
Oh, Ken, won't you help me a little? You know, you see me for me. Here's my heart going throb, throb, throb. All my life long, it'll go like that. And with every throb, it'll say one word to me. Kiss, kiss, kiss. Until at last it stops. And yet the man I love is the man I must marry. The man who can trample and kill. Yes, and lift me. Beneath his feet. For his honor.
Oh,
no. Only a girl who was fighting to keep the most precious thing in her life. Her love for the man who loved her.
I don't think you're right. Somehow I can't see it. But whatever you tell me to do, I'll do it. Now and always.
I love you. And now, before you go, for you must go soon, I want to give you something. Something for you to remember me by. That we may share together all our lives long. Just you over there and me over here. You remember this ring?
Yes.
I told you it belonged to my own dear mother. I want you to take it, please, and keep it in remembrance of me.
Until I die.
I'm afraid it won't compare favorably with the crown jewels, but it's the best I have.
Oh, my darling, my darling.
Please, please, I'm afraid I can't stand very much more.
Am I never to hear from you again?
Yes, I'll write to you once a year on my birthday.
In care of Lord Carnaby?
In care of Lord Carnaby. And now, dear Chief, good night. You must go now.
I'll go, Linda. Goodbye, my dearest.
Goodbye, my love.
You're all I need, my darling. Copyright Golden AB.